Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Team doesn't play. All right, the Clydesdales are out, and man, do I love those stupid horses. Oh, God. There's some things about opening day that are great, but baseball just ruins it. Like, it's, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's get it back into college basketball. Jason Smith also coming up, hour number two. Stick around and listen to Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. March is here, and that means Zen Sports has launched a new VIP Players Club sweepstakes. It's the Big Bucket Club sweepstakes. One grand prize winner earns a $10,000 bonus bet on the NCAA championship game or $5,000 cash. If you don't win the big prize, fear not, 20 small prize winners will each earn a $100 bonus bet on the NCAA championship game or $50 cash. You can earn entries on every bet placed in March, every dollar bet in March, and you can earn 10 times the entries on all parlay wagers. Plus, if you sign up and make your first bet with code JEFFTN, J-E-F-F-T-N, you'll earn 500 bonus entries into the Big Bucket Sweepstakes. College baseball has also been added to Zen Sports for wagering. Plus, they're also offering multi-sport parlay profit boost, and you'll get a 15% boost on up to 10 qualifying parlay wagers. See full terms on the Zen Sports app. Zen Sports, betting just got better. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. You must be 21 or older and located in Tennessee to wager. Jason Smith going to join us here in about 25 minutes. Before we do that, let's get into the list. Sweet, sweet cash. All right, Cobb, this comes to us from Front Office Sports. I knew, obviously, that every round that you advanced was advantageous financially for the conferences. I don't think I knew this. This, according to David Rumsey of Front Office Sports, the Sweet 16 in men's March Madness tipping off with teams representing a record low four conferences and no Cinderella stories, simply means the rich are getting richer. Conferences earn roughly $2 million for every game one of their teams plays in the NCAA tournament through the Final Four. He also notes the championship game does not award another payment. So far, the SEC's record 14 March Madness bids are paying off the most, to the tune of at least $58 million. That comes from $2 million for the SEC's automatic qualifier, that's conference tournament champion Florida, $26 million for the 13 at-large bids, and another $30 million for the teams that advance past the first round, including seven to the Sweet 16, the most ever for one conference. He also notes the Big East, with no teams left in the tournament, has earned $18 million from nine units, more than the ACC's $14 million from seven units so far. Duke is the lone ACC team still alive. For the rest of the tournament, there are 12 units worth $24 million still up for grabs, which will all be earned by either the SEC, the Big Ten, ACC, or the Big 12. So that means no extra cash for the non-power conferences, as has been the case in recent years. I bring all this up because yesterday, Ross Dellinger of Yahoo Sports had a big story about the future of how sports are going to work with the House settlement. And I think you're in agreement with me where I'm still not convinced the House settlement goes through as is currently constructed. And especially, I got real concerns about the whole Deloitte. Was it Deloitte or was it PwC? Who's gonna evaluate the NIL, the legitimacy of NIL deals?
Right, yeah. Deloitte's going to be that clearinghouse to establish what is, quote, real NIL deals outside and above and beyond the revenue sharing.
Correct, and I'm sure there's no conflict of interest considering I believe Deloitte is the corporate partner of the NCAA. So I'm sure that won't present any legal battles whatsoever. But one of the aspects of Ross's story is schools like Villanova, schools that technically have a football team, they don't play FBS football. They're an FCS football team, and they're not fielding what I kind of refer to as vanity projects, which is wanting to spend a lot of money in sports that don't make money. The SEC in football, Big Ten in hockey, like things that, I mean, honestly, like for the most part, with the exception of a couple of women's basketball teams, those are kind of vanity projects. If you want to be good in those, you're going to lose a lot of money. But like, not everybody can be Tennessee and still selling out the artist formerly known as Thompson Bowling for women's basketball, or UConn, however you want to look at it. But the idea is that by not having to have the majority of the money, I think what the ratio was, it 75% to football, or is it 80% to football?
Well, it'll depend school by school. Won't
correct. It? Yeah, that's right. And I think it's technically up to school's discretion. But the idea would be schools like Villanova, they don't have to share with football. They're going to have more money for basketball. I'm still a little lukewarm. It's one of those things that I understand in theory what everyone's trying to say. I still believe it's going to be a big problem in that even the basketball-only operations, they're just not bringing in the highest amount of revenue, which is, in the end, it's the TV deals.
Yeah, but you have 85 fewer scholarship players to pay. You don't, and football, they are your highest-paid athletes at all the other high major schools. The Big East doesn't have to worry about that. So, no, their athletic department revenues aren't nearly what the SEC's are. But when you can basically devote 95% of what you do have to basketball, put you on a pretty good footing. And we've been kind of talking about this, like the advantage that there could be to being in the Big East, which is probably why we're seeing Kevin Willard flirt so heavily with Villanova. And maybe even, you know, if they lose tonight, it's conceivable there could be a headline tomorrow. Kevin Willard to be your next Villanova basketball coach.
Heck, there could be a headline 20 minutes after the game.
Very well. Given Kevin Willard's track record the past week, he might
just announce it at the press conference.
Yeah. No, so it's, I think the Big East is only going to increase from here. I think what this season has been is a wake-up call to the ACC and to the Big East. They care a lot about basketball, but they have not invested in basketball the way that the SEC and the Big Ten have. But the SEC and the Big Ten, Jeffrey, they care about baseball. They care about football. They care about football a whole lot more than they care about anything else, but they also care about baseball. Somewhere in the Big Ten, they care about wrestling and about hockey. Sure. And in the SEC, they care about softball and about baseball and about gymnastics. And they want to be good at those things too. And so
Big Ten volleyball. Volleyball's big in the Big Ten as well.
Another one. So it's like the Big East is so singularly focused on men's basketball that you're going to see 90, 95% of their NIL contributions and revenue sharing contributions go to men's basketball. That helps.
Yeah, I'm with you. I still wonder, though. I think there's been so many people that have been screaming about the amount of money that's spent on football and basketball compared to other sports. I don't think that what they realize is if this really does become a business, Cobb, all these other sports are just going to be club sports. And honestly, maybe that's the way that it should be. Like, maybe that's more reflective of what a college should do with athletics. But like, I don't think the average fan realizes how much one sport is propping up everything.
Yeah, but the SEC network and the Big Ten network, they need that programming, man. Once this basketball tournament's over, they got to have baseball on. They got to have softball on. ESPN's got to continue to broadcast the Women's College World Series and the Men's College World Series into May and into June for baseball. So I think the networks and the leagues are going to try to stop that from happening. Is it ever going to be a situation where these other sports have millions of dollars spent on their roster every year? No, but I don't think they're going club because I think the networks need that programming.
Okay. I don't disagree with that, but have you been following what's going to happen to the NFL network?
Oh, no. What's going to happen to the NFL network?
This has been kind of, there's been a little bit more reporting. I think basically there's been reporting this week that kind of confirms what had been talked about for the last few months. And it's that the last TV deal kind of tipped the NFL's hand, in which originally the NFL Network is launched roughly at the same time the Big Ten Network is, and then the SEC Network, I think, comes around 5 or 6 years later. And if you rewind the clock, the idea was that was going to be a big revenue generator because of the cable network fees that you would get. But now what the Big Ten realized, and so basically what the NFL did was they started packaging exclusive games so that you had to have the NFL Network to watch those games. But then someone raised their hand and was like, y'all realize we can just like sell each of these games for about $150 to $200 million a pop, and we don't have to have our own TV network. And so now they're in the process of basically selling off all of their inventory and assets, i.e. games, the past games. So like the archives to all NFL games, and they're selling it to ESPN. And so the NFL Network's going to go away. And I also think about it in the context of, we don't really know what ESPN is going to be in 10 or 15 years. Like, I will always stand the ground. Like, ESPN is going to exist in some form or fashion. But, like, what if the avenue is it's basically an app and all you're doing is going there for live games? And we don't really have linear television where you need all-day programming. You just need certain games. And, like, I think in that scenario, like, no one's really paying for the SEC. Anyone that's subscribing to the SEC Network, for the most part, they're not subscribing for any of these non-revenue sports that we're talking about. It's for to have football and basketball. And so, like, right. I just wonder if it is true that if we still live in the environment we do today, which is you need all-day programming or programming throughout the year, I think you're right. But I can also envision a world where we don't.
Yeah, pour one out for Around the Horn. You know?
Like, R.I.P.
That's a casualty of this whole movement, a staple of our childhood there, you know. That's an example of the all-day programming.
What is reality even going to do?
Right? I mean, it's a consolidation of personalities for sure. It's just Stephen A. on every show now. I mean, he's on every show yelling about LeBron. I mean, you know.
He has been cooking with gas today.
You know he loves it. This today. Is what he lives for.
Gosh,
this is so good for him.
He said he'd throw hands with LeBron.
And LeBron, intentionally or not, is just giving him value.
Does anyone know, George, can you look up, is Stephen A. a Clutch client?
Oh, that's a great question.
Because part of me wonders if this is a work.
Right? I mean, this whole LeBron feud has done nothing but propagate Stephen A. The big winner in all of it is Stephen A. Smith, no matter if he looks like an idiot.
He's not.
Is he CAA?
It doesn't matter.
He is not associated with Clutch, no.
Yeah, because, I mean, honestly, like, if you're LeBron, this is where... God, he was painting yesterday too. I mean, he had all the colors working. Like, he was trying to equate him and Bronny to Ken Griffey Sr., Ken Griffey Jr., which was disgusting. Like, absolutely disgusting. And then he went peak LeBron. This is one of my favorite LeBron tell your stories. When he started trying to call out Wendy with an argument that nobody's ever made, where he's like, this guy tells everybody he's my best friend. Like, he's never said that. Like, I think he's been pretty open. Like, he doesn't have a career without you. I think he's never denied that. But, like, that's always a classic LeBronism where he takes something that is, like, tangentially related to an argument, and then he paints a new narrative that he can win. And, like, that's masterclass LeBron. But I still always go to, like, if you really, truly were personally violated by this, you do not make a scene on the court at the Staples Center in front of before a national game with Stephen A. Like, you don't do that publicly. There are 8 billion other ways you could get in touch with him. And so, like, you just completely elevated this entire thing. What did you do? You didn't think he was going to talk about it?
You just prop him up.
Yes.
But by approaching it this way. And that's exactly what Stephen A. and what Colin Cowherd live for. They live for this stuff, man. Like it's a gift to give Cowherd
credit. I don't think Cowherd likes to make himself as much of the conversation as Stephen A. does. Like Stephen A. believes like he's a character involved. I also want to be very clear. I am not anti Stephen A. Like, does he do everything the way that I would? No, obviously not. But the guy does 8 billion, like there's no questioning his work ethic. Like he does 8 billion shows, like he's grinding, like, but like the other problem is, I always feel like, what was that Netflix documentary that was about, was it the Anti-Social Network? It was about social media. And it's like, I felt like everyone missed the point. It's like, when you watch that entire documentary, you realize like you do it to yourself. Like in the end, the algorithm is just designed to like see what you react to. It's the same thing with Stephen A. Like if we don't react, if we don't do anything, like he doesn't have a platform. But it's the fact that like everyone reacts to all of it, so therefore he has the platform.
Right. So the days of outside the lines are gone. The days
sports
of
reporters.
The horn
I was
gone.
Never a sports reporters guy though.
Yeah, but I didn't hear. That? Is that still
even it? Like they tried to bring it back, like kind of via Zoom, but I never needed to hear Mike Lupica yell at me.
You know, they're just other than me and you, Jeffrey. Other than the two of us here on 92.9, there's just not a lot of places you can go for intellectually stimulating sports.
No, of course not. I also think like this. The other thing that I'm kind of out on. I'm out on this. The athletes, like, I think they should, like, LeBron's kind of leading this narrative of, I don't like how the NBA is covered. And, yeah, boo!
All right, well, go get yourself traded to Memphis and get the small market some love, you know?
Well, not only that, like, you don't get to decide how we talk about you. Like, if you want everyone to just, like, that's PR. Like, that's the thing is, and this used to drive me insane. When we had the whole WNBA movement last summer and all the complaining was about how it was being covered and talked about like a real sport, and you saw all the athletes getting upset, like, why aren't they just propping us up? Well, that's not what this is. That's what your PR team is for.
Like, how does LeBron want to see the NBA covered? It's one thing to complain about it, but like, give us some action items here that we can, give us a better way.
I think what he is basically subtweeting is, I think they've all collectively decided they don't like how inside the NBA talks about them now.
Oh, right. Painting the league as soft. It's the old hats kind of coming out, the soft new generation of players.
It does more harm than good, to which I'm like, we're talking about you.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I get that to a certain extent. I mean, I don't actually totally disagree with that because – I mean, you get Charles and Shaq and Kenny the Jet in there, and they just, well, you know, back in my day, it was a lot. I actually kind of agree with him on that.
No, I definitely think there is a tendency from that crew to elevate their own careers and their own timeline. I would also point out that is nothing new. That is a tale as old as time. Also, there have never been more opportunities for you to combat that narrative than today. By the way, LeBron's podcast season 2 launching this week.
Yeah, you have the narrative in your own hands. Half the time we're writing off something you said on your own show or on your own production, you know?
Well, then the other thing is that's annoying is I'm all out on the media paints us a certain way. They have what they're doing is, and this is something you and I've talked about with Ja. The media has become a proxy or a placement for reply guys online. 98% of what they're talking about is people chirping at them online. Because most every single, like for instance, every person that covers the Grizzlies on a day-to-day basis, they have to see them every day. No one has written an inflammatory word this entire season. But Ja gets in his feels. It has nothing to do with the media. He's just reading his replies, even though he's off social media, of course.
Yeah. So the media, right?
Yeah.
That I grew up with was like the local newspaper. right? Like if in 2007, Pau Gasol had a gripe with the media, he had a gripe with Calkins or with Ron Tillery. That was it.
I mean, to your point, like we said, I believe nobody is on this current road trip, but like Ron Tillery, who had the same job that Cobb did once upon a time, went to all 82 games.
Well, and it was the same job and title, but a different job in terms of local beat writers used to establish the narrative. The local columnists used to establish the narrative, and to a certain extent, the people doing what we're doing now on the local radio airwaves, they're the ones who established the narratives. And yeah, there were national shows at ESPN, but they weren't all geared towards getting engagement on social media.
I mean, remember, to your point about Around the Horn and PTI, remember like what a big deal it was if like they talked about one of your teams? Because largely in the South, let's be real, like most of us grew up either college football, college basketball, or to a certain extent the Grizzlies, but it took the Grizzlies 6 years to even pop up on anything nationally to even get competitive to get into the playoffs. But like when you would see your team on the rundown, like you basically stopped everything you were doing.
Yep.
And you waited and waited and waited. All right, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk to Jason Smith. We'll do that next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Jason Smith is the co-host of the Jason and John Show, weekdays right here on 92.9 FM, ESPN, from 11 until 2. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at JasonSmith929. Jason, I want to get into a couple of men that you're familiar with that will be in new places, but I kind of wanted to start with this, where I don't know how the masses of the Tiger fan base feels about Calipari still today. Like, you know, because I found myself on Saturday, like I think Megan's roughly my age, maybe a touch younger, but you have Brad on the sideline, Brad's dressed to the nines, Ellen's there, they're going nuts, the camera can't get off of them. And I just kind of found myself wondering, it's like, is Cal likable again? Like, I, you know what I mean? Like, not fully, but like, I kind of think the underdog, the us against the world kind of thing, even if it's a fake narrative because they might have the most expensive roster in the entire country, I just think this role suits him better.
Oh, and I agree with you. And you've made this point before. I do think as time has passed, and especially now that he's changed jobs, I just think something about shifting from the job that you left Memphis for probably does a little bit more in terms of that healing process. And I'm assuming we're talking about how Memphians, obviously, right, and fans of that program feel about him. I just think when you move on to the next one, it probably also gives you another layer of sort of, all right, you know, We can move on now because he's had to move on. And you can look at that time, you know, Cal only getting one championship.
Yep.
And you can even, you know, if you're that guy that's rooting against him, you can say, wow, well, a lot of people think he should have won more than that. And so you can, you know, if that's what you need to sort of put this to bed, whatever it is, I agree with you. Watching this year too, and there was, I was watching that scene too. I mean, they're all, you know, his daughter's, like you said, grown woman now. We remember when she was in school here. You know, and that family is in a much different phase of its life, but it's still that same family that we knew and we had here for 9 years. Obviously, they were a big part of the Memphis community, fully embedded, entrenched in terms of going to school here and everything else. And to see them at this stage, particularly after you start 0-5 in the SEC, right? I mean, he's had to turn it around. We saw the struggles early. You can't do anything but respect it. He's got a Memphis kid on the team. I know Billy finished his high school career up north, but he's got a Memphis guy on the team and Billy Richmond III. I just think when you add, you know, a young man you could certainly root for in Billy to, you know, a John that's at a different stage now,
yeah,
you know, than the guy who, yeah, for most people, it's not they don't understand him taking Kentucky, the blue blood. It's the way you took the players. And the more time that's passed, we've also seen it's what happens everywhere. And especially now that you can transfer, you know, immediately everything else. I mean, typically you're taking players with you. So I think that was a lot of the pain, and we've certainly had a lot of time to get over it. But I'm with you, Jeffrey. I do think this season, too, if you still had some hard feelings, it's probably softened you up at least a little bit.
Yeah, so keeping the conversation going about former Memphis coaches in new places, Jason, how surprised were you? Or maybe you weren't. I don't know. I was surprised when I saw Josh Pastner to UNLV. I just didn't necessarily see that coming. What was your reaction to that development?
It's so funny, but because before the news broke, we had had him on the show last week, and I'd asked him, when are you getting back in? And Josh, as he typically does, went into one of his, you know, sort of spiels, because, yeah, and in this case, he's been asked this question before, but he went right into sort of what he'd been programmed to say was, it's got to be right fit, it's got to be right job and everything else. And so, Cobb, to the point of your question, if you'd asked me beforehand, before we knew he was involved, frankly, right there when I asked him the question, if we were talking about fits, Josh Pastner, who's never had a carbonated drink, Josh Pastner, who doesn't curse, being out there at UNLV and everything we know about
there,
the history
there
of that
is
program.
A I know he's not Mormon, but there are a lot of Mormons in Vegas too.
The strip itself, that sin, I mean, what are we? It's Sin City. So in terms of fit, there's it's like we talked about that, you know, right when he got the gig. It's if you're looking for fits, and he said he was, didn't look like much of one, at least on the surface. I think it tells you too, though. Listen. You know, Jeffrey's right. I mean, he's on television on ESPN. You keep yourself kind of at the forefront. Maybe these ADs, you know, they still see. But you can't do that forever. My point, he had to pick one here and jump back in at some point and get this thing going. Otherwise, they forget about you. I mean, you know, at some point they're going to move on from you. And so again, and especially with the I know he made one term at Georgia Tech, you know, sort of lack of success. UNLV looks like a job that, you know, he can feel like, Josh's a West Coast guy, always has been, all, you know, desert guy, all of that. He'll adjust with what he has to do. Key will be the staff he puts together, because it's been so key for him at Memphis, where the staff and its issues and not getting the X's and O's guy hurt him at the end. And then at Georgia Tech, where the more you hear about his time there and what he had in terms of assistance, we know Eric Revenoe, the Portland coach, was the X's and O's guy, and it worked right off top. It was going well. But then in terms of some of the other hires, you know, how much did they do for you? In the end, it's his programs. And back to the point, he's got to get this one right. Like, you don't want to go out having not led UNLV, having not put it in a place where it's better off than you got it, having not made at least a couple of tournaments, because at that point, they're going to start looking at you and say, okay, we know what he is. He's got a ceiling. He's going to run a clean program, but he's not going to get you in the second week of the tournament. And that can have a tendency to last. And so he's got to get it right, and he knows that. So he's going to do everything he has to in terms of making the adjustments to make this work in the best way that he can.
Where do you think he's going to get players?
I have no idea. His dad used to run Houston Hoops, and yeah, we had this running joke, like, when are you going to finally get a player out of Houston for the Tigers? And his whole thing was, well, he didn't want to have any sort of, any sort of misconceptions out there that it was being done dirty, or, you know what I'm saying, coming through his father, they're doing that kind of, that was part of the reason. I think eventually he ended up going after a couple, but they never did. So I have no, you know, Josh is going to dip in. Listen, he's got a lot of people that, Josh Pastner has a lot of people in the industry that love him. You know why? Because even after you've moved on from him or whatever else, he's still checking on you. And I'm talking about ADs, folks in the media, when it comes to, hey, what's a good job? Hey, man, you talk to this AD, you think you put me on the, you know, you think you might drop my name? He's got so many great relationships. That's probably the best point of this whole Josh, you know, conversation. Because he's treated people the right way, he's got great relationships. And so back to it, Jeffrey, if there's a coach who says, you know what, I ain't got enough NIL for this kid, or you know what, he's not good enough for me, I mean, Josh will get that call. He'll have other coaches at other programs helping him get players. I bet you a Jack Murphy, who he's worked a long time with back in the day, what's at Arizona now,
yeah,
is a guy who's a close friend of Josh. My point, he's got so many relationships in the biz. He'll get them from wherever he needs to, Jeffrey. And that's the thing. You have to now, or have the ability to do so, because it ain't so much about where you're recruiting the country, what regions do you have strong ties in. You got to be on the Zoom talking to kids all over this freaking country, because you're doing more of that now, frankly, than you are, you know, recruiting freshmen, recruiting high school seniors. So he's going to make the adjustments. One thing about Josh, nobody, it's true, it sounds cliche-ish, but this dude literally, like, I've never seen anybody work as hard. The guy memorizes every number, every relationship he tries to leave on the up and up. At some point, I think it's going to pay off for him. He just needs to have that right staff around him, I think, and it can be a success at UNLV.
Well, speaking of getting players, I've seen a little buzz percolating on the social medias about one Mikey Williams in Memphis. And I'm imagining y'all have probably gotten into this at some point over the last couple of days. But Jason, yeah, can you help me make sense of this? Like, why? Like, why is this a thing? How much of a thing is this? And is this a good idea?
All right. On the surface, you'd say, Penny, what are you doing? You know, and we get it. Penny's got a great relationship with him, but he, you know, you just put the program, and not necessarily on hold, but in some ways you did, because you were reserving a spot. You had to wait on Mikey to get done with his legal issues. It ends up fizzling out, and in the end, it's a waste of time. However, we know that Penny's talked about, it's not just basketball for him. Whatever this, you know, he has got an interest in Mikey that goes beyond that. Maybe it's Mikey, the star, the social, everything that he was. Penny's seeing a little of himself in that. Whatever it is, there's a soft spot. And so, again, this idea that Mikey was going to be completely, this relationship would be over even if he went out to a different school, probably not a reality. Because once Penny, you know, you got his phone number in your phone, I mean, the guy's a pro. And Mikey Williams, as far as we still know, wants to be that, even though to this point he has not shown he can be, you know, a large part of something that's bigger than himself. Back to the point, Cobb, on the surface, you think, what are you doing? But then, you know, and this is where I give my part and the credit. You know, John came on today as we talked about this, like you said, and talked about what he's heard since, and it sounds like it's out of the Mikey camp. Obviously, it would have to be, is that he's willing to come in, take no NIL or next to none, come in and be a bit guy. You tell me whatever I got to do, I'll do it. You know, Cobb, you do those contracts with guys, set aside NIL where, okay, you're going to do this, me and you sign, it's between me and you. Sometimes coach says, hey, you mess up any of these, you get out of here. A lot of times you see it at the high school level or whatever else. I would certainly have a firm understanding by bringing Mikey in. And number one for me, especially as it relates to continuity with my roster, would be, Mikey, you're going to be here for a couple years. Like, you know, if you're coming here and no, you're not getting any NIL or whatever else, but you're also, you might not be a part of the rotation this first year. Frankly, I need guys that are going to be here for a couple of years, that if I'm investing in you, I need you to invest in me for multiple years, because that's what's missing right now at Penny Hardaway's program, is continuity through your roster. That's why your Penny did a great job this year with Stansberry help, but he made his team of 12 of 13 you're replacing. But every time you have to do that, you are gambling what you want to do on chemistry the next year, everything else. You can see them on paper. You can see them in the videos. You don't know what it's going to look like, frankly, until you get into conference season. Look at the team 2 years ago. It looked good through the non-conference. You don't know, you know, when that one guy goes down, Caleb Mills, that the whole house of cards is. You have no idea. So you're gambling when you're replacing this much. So, again, getting closer to what Houston's doing, Auburn, where you've kept guys. If I'm making the case to myself that I want Mikey in my program, not just because I care about him as a human being, but he can help my basketball program, that's the way, that's at least the plan I would have for him if I'm Penny Hardaway, because you have to protect yourself. I mean, Mikey at this point has not shown that he can be, we went through it. He had some good games last year, one against Iowa State. I mean, but not on a consistent basis has he been a part of a team, a winning team. And that would certainly be my concern. P.J. Haggerty wasn't part of a winner last year either. It tells a completely different set of circumstances. But you can sometimes turn guys into winners. And we know Penny seems to love him some Mikey. So it feels like this is inevitable, Cobb, that this is going to happen.
Jason, how do you view this season now that it's over?
Success in the sense that Penny had his best year, but you left – and I know Penny would say this, too much on the table. Look, we can call it a great year because, I mean, again, in program history, you'd never finished runner-up in the Maui. And this was not some simp Maui. It was one of the best fields they had. And they knocked off Michigan State, UConn, two teams that made the tournament, one of them that made the Sweet 16. That was all real. Like 10-3, fourth best non-conference, fourth toughest non-conference schedule in the country, according to KenPom, against that schedule. That's impressive what he did. We know, you know, you get the 5 seed, best since Cal. That's an accomplishment in addition to being picked, you know, after being picked 2nd in the AAC. We all said they should still win it when they were, but you still go out and prove it by beating UAB 3 times, winning the title. That's a good year, you know, for Ryan Silverfield. Again, and I'm not picking on football, but I'm bringing in the comparison in terms of how we say good years, great years. Ryan, picked first in the conference, finishes fourth, yet we gets 11 wins. So is that a good year or bad? I think when you compare that, 11 wins, yeah, but if they're hollow and you haven't won the conference title, you finish fourth. Well, in a lot of ways, you didn't accomplish what this Memphis team did, which was take care of the business it's supposed to. You're one of the most resourced programs, in this case, the most resourced program on the basketball side. Football's now that. Go out and do what you're supposed to do. Memphis did that. And so that is a success. But in not beating a 12 seed, and I get it, we get into the whole he didn't have Tyrese Hunter. In not beating that team, you left too much on the table. And even winning the first one, if you get to Maryland, the 4 seed, you lose there, I still think there's a little bit more in terms of the pop you got going in the next season. But it has to be considered a success, Jeffrey, to sort of bottom line it, because I think people, and I made this point on our show, even if you doubted Penny coming into this season, even if you still do, what you saw was a coach that said and apparently did look in the mirror and he grew. He said, I'm going to be the one that gets better. Media and stuff, no, y'all don't change the way, like LeBron's doing right now, the way you're covering me. The one that's got to deal with it. I'm the one that's going to control the controllables. And we saw a coach that was capable of growth. And so if you're looking ahead, you're hoping that Penny continues that, that he's not a guy that thinks he's got it figured out, like he told us he didn't before this season, goes on to have his best one, but that one that's going to continue to grow and not just adjust with the times, but adjust his style. And right now, I tell you, first and foremost, and we pointed the numbers out there to end the season, you know, part of that style is an offensive philosophy that doesn't value possessions enough, and it will come back to bite you. You can, you know, in the AAC, 16-2, those teams you can get away with, come back to bite you in the tournament every time, because Cobb knows this, but Jeffrey, you know it. Those possessions matter so much more in that tournament, every single one of them. And if you are 308th in turnover percentage, and you're throwing the ball away 16 times, 8 in the first half, well, they only scored 2 points. Second half, though, 12 of them. That's what made Colorado State start believing. When Bourne's getting easy layoffs off Haggerty turnovers, I realized, okay, if Tyrese is out there, maybe that's a little different. But Tyrese's turnover percentage was just as high. The fact is, it's been, unfortunately, as I said, too characteristic of the 7 years, 4 of the 7 outside in the top, outside the top 300. You know, you're in the 300s in turnover percentage. That's another area where, okay, if I'm Penny, I'm saying this is an area of growth. I've got to attack. And frankly, if you look at the tournament numbers, the Sweet 16, particularly the last 3 years, if you're outside top 150 of turnover percentage, frankly, no team made it last year. You've got two this year, Michigan and BYU. You got to clean that up. And so back to the point, I saw Penny grow this year. Hopefully he's going to continue to attack some of the things that have been, you know, weaknesses here, including the turnover percentage, and this thing continues to get better, Jeff.
Jason, we appreciate my man.
Thanks, boss.
That is Jason Smith of the Jason and John Show. We come back, we tell your story next, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Cobb, for today's Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story, I got to go to the Daily Mail. Here was the headline about Fran McCaffrey taking the pen job. Caitlin Clark's potential father-in-law, Fran McCaffrey, quote, agrees to coach at Donald Trump's alma mater, Penn. That is breathtaking. Like, what are your editors doing at CBS? Like, they got to step their game up.
I'll also say that's probably about the extent of the Daily Mail's American college basketball coverage for the season. But if that was it, boy, what a blaze of glory.
That is about as good as it gets. All right, man, let's have some good basketball games tonight.
Let's do it.
Let's ignore the Grizzlies. Want to thank Cobb for being here. If you missed anything, be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. Also, thanks to Eric and to Jason for joining. For George, for Cobb, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening to Gabe Kuhn Show live from the Horseshoe in Tunica coming up next.